Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, February 17, 2025. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening over Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab, top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up with our scripture reading where we left off last week. We're in the chapter, let's see, we read 14 of the Gospel of John, so tonight we're going to be looking at John chapter 15, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 15. I am the true vine, and my Father is the husbandman. Every branch in me that beareth not fruit he taketh away, and every branch that beareth fruit he purgeth it, that it may bring forth more fruit. Now ye are clean through the word which I have spoken unto you. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself except it abide in the vine, no more can ye except ye abide in me. I am the vine, ye are the branches. He that abideth in me, and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit, for without me he can do nothing. If a man abide not in me, he is cast forth as a branch, and is withered, and men gather them, and cast them into the fire, and they are burned. If ye abide in me, and my words abide in you, ye shall ask what ye will, and it shall be done unto you. Herein is my Father glorified, that ye bear much fruit. So shall ye be my disciples. As the Father hath loved me, so have I loved you. Continue ye in my love. If ye keep my commandments, ye shall abide in my love, even as I have kept my Father's commandments, and abide in his love. These things have I spoken unto you, that my joy might remain in you, and that your joy might be full. This is my commandment, that ye love one another, as I have loved you. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. Ye are my friends, if ye do whatsoever I command you. Henceforth I call you not servants, for the servant knoweth not what his Lord doeth, but I have called you friends. For all things that I have heard of my Father I have made known unto you. Ye have not chosen me, but I have chosen you, and ordained you, that ye should go and bring forth fruit, and that your fruit should remain, that whatsoever ye shall ask of the Father in my name, he may give it you. These things I command you, that ye love one another. If the world hate you, ye know that it hated me before it hated you. If ye were of the world would love his own. But because ye are not of the world, but I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hateth you. Remember the word that I said unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord. If they have persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they have kept my saying, they will keep yours also. But all these things will they do unto you for my name's sake, because they know not him that sent me. If I had not come and spoken unto them, they had not had sin, but now they have no cloak for their sin. He that hateth me, hateth my Father also. If I had not done among them the works which none other man did, they had not had sin, but now have they both seen and hated, both me and my Father. But this cometh to pass, that the word might be fulfilled that is written in their law, they hated me without a cause. But when the Comforter is come, whom I will send unto you from the Father, even the Spirit of truth which proceedeth from the Father, he shall testify of me. And ye also shall bear witness, because ye have been with me from the beginning.
Okay, Jan, do we have any questions or announcements tonight?
We have several questions, John. I believe the first one's been submitted before, maybe twice before. It says, I am reaching out desperately for help. CPS is violating my constitutional rights and is attempting to terminate my parental rights on March 7th. My child wants to come home more than anything. It has been a year since we've been separated, with 8 of those months spent in foster care while they investigate. This has been a nightmare, and I am fighting with everything I have. I need guidance on how to shut this court case down, file a federal lawsuit, and win. I have read everything on your website and truly believe it's possible. I just need direction on the next steps to take.
All right, I did see that email. I did see there was a phone number in there, too, wasn't there?
Not on the one I had.
All right, it may have been an older one.
Yeah, maybe above the text here, John, there was.
All right. Yeah, I'll try to find time to call her this week and see once if there's something we could do, maybe with a habeas corpus or something. And, you know, we're getting close, but we're not there yet. And we got to save our courts and... you know, we heard the Trump, I forget what the number was. It was quite a few. I think it was 150 judges he got rid of. Does that sound right? Anybody hear about that?
No.
No? Well, if
I have not.
If that happened, then I'm pretty sure I got it from a reliable source, because I don't listen to anything but reliable sources. But I'll have to look further into it. That's true, then things are starting to progress. And that's good news, but we'll see what's going on. All right, well, I'm working on another paper. The timing couldn't be better. The timing of our last paper that went in and the timing of our paper before that went in, and even the timing of our paper before that, all just was so extremely timely. You know, we kind of took a guess and waiting for certain points to happen, and we took a guess and hit them out. And they did seem to, you know, make its connection with the people that we wanted to make it with, particularly Trump. And then later on with Pam Bondi, the Attorney General, when she came on board. And we kind of updated her on the last paperwork because she wasn't around before that. And so she's been brought up to snuff, so to speak, of where everything we've done to that point. It's timely for another paper to be a little more pushy. And maybe we'll talk about that tonight, kind of thinking about that. But we'll see where we go with that. All right, anyway, I'll try to find time this week to give the woman a call and see once if there's something we can do, maybe with habeas corpus or something. Next.
Yeah, on the bottom of that email, John, there was a telephone number.
All right.
Okay, next question. What we are dealing with here in Pennsylvania is what is known as the per capita or head tax. We have received separate delinquent tax notices and bills, and we have many questions regarding this tax. We have contacted the tax collection agency with questions regarding jurisdiction, our liability to pay with definitions of taxpayer, resident, and so forth, constitutionality, collection, and enforcement. We have received a letter back from the tax collection firm's attorney that did not fully satisfy our questions. He merely regurgitated the PA legislation pertaining to the tax. I ask NLA for its perspective on this direct tax's constitutionality and its suggestion on what to do in the midst of this delinquency. Any further expounding and commentary on this appreciated.
Yeah, well, it's an unlawful tax like any other direct tax. They said it was a... How did they describe the tax in the beginning of that question?
Well, it's a per capita or head tax.
Per capita head tax. Okay. Yeah. Well, that does not require them to go out and put a tax on a direct tax on an individual because direct tax is unlawful. You can read about that in Article 1. I think it's Section 9 or 10. I'm taking a quick look right now. let's see. Yeah, here it is. It is the Article 1, Section 9, and it would be Yeah, subsection 9, and it would be 2, 3, I believe it's number 4. Number 4. No captation or other direct tax shall be laid unless in proportion to the census or enumeration herein before directed to be taken. Now, a direct tax, I talked with Brent about this a while back, and I gave him my thoughts on what I think that's really saying, and he kind of agreed with that and said that was his thoughts too, that a direct tax, if a direct tax is applied upon the people, the head of the people, okay, then it has to be uniformly, has to be in every state across in the union, so it's got to be completely across America. It's got to be for X amount of dollars per head, and that is taxed directly to the state itself. And the state has to find lawful ways to collect that tax, maybe by raising the sales tax by a 0.5 or something like that, you know, half of 1% or a quarter of 1% or maybe even less, you know, but whatever that might be in order to achieve that tax. But they cannot put a direct tax. Any tax that you can't pass on to someone else is a direct tax. So corporations could be hit with taxes, and they can pass it on to the people. And again, the states can be hit with taxes, which is exactly what this is talking about. But again, they got to find a lawful way to collect it. So it's unlawful. I would write a letter asking them how do they go about doing that when and then read to them no captation, a direct tax shall be laid in the Constitution, Article, again, it's Article 1, Section 9, Clause 1, 2, 3, Clause 4. Okay, next question.
Okay, my matter revolves around CPS taking my babies who had no birth certificate or Social Security number because the mother and I are plant-based. Accused us of felony abuse neglect. We were arrested here in California and charged. We did our first trial January 2022 with no attorney. It ended up in a hung jury and declared a mistrial. The state of California pursued the charges again with a new prosecutor, pending a second trial coming up in March of 2025. What would you recommend as a possible approach?
All right, well, that's double jeopardy, so you can't be tried a second time for what they're claiming to be a crime, number one. Number two, there's no such thing as a hung jury. So you should appeal that, and you should appeal it to, up the process, okay? And you have to be standing on the Constitution. You have to be standing on, your Bill of Rights. And, for instance, let me see which one it is. I think it's 7. Hang on a second. In suits of common law, okay, this is where this is about money. So let me just take a quick look at this. Right of trial by jury shall be okay. This would also hold up to anything else. In suits of common law, where the value of the controversy shall exceed $20, the right of a trial by jury shall be preserved. But then it goes on, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court in the United States than according to the rules of the common law. And so the second part of that does apply to this particular case. And the rules of common law says that you can't be tried twice, and it is also written in our Constitution that you cannot be tried again for the same crime. Let me see if I can find that real quick. It might be in this one. It might be in the Fifth Amendment. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on the presentment of an indictment of a grand jury. So the other thing is was there a grand jury? Was there an indictment? If there's no indictment, then there's no court case, except in the cases arising in the land and naval forces, so on, or the militia, when it actually in service at time of war, public or danger. Nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy on life or limb. So there it is, the double jeopardy. Can't double jeopardize you on this. No judge has the power or the authority to rule that anything concerning, the jury's decision. What the judge has a duty to do is send them back and sit there and work it out until you figure out what you're going to do here. And if they can't figure it out, then they have to let the person loose, and that has to be the decision. So I would come with the perspective or the thinking that because they couldn't come to a decision and the judge wouldn't give them the extended time to order to do that, which he should have done that, then for that reason, it's forget the hung jury. That doesn't exist in common law. Of course, they're applying civil law, but you need to be talking about common law. So those are the positions that I'd be thinking about and trying to form my position, taking it up the line, appealing the process all the way up. Also, what court was this in is another problem or question. Is it administrative court? If they were applying statutes upon you, then, hey, it's an administrative court. It has nothing to do with us. That's another argument to be made. Now, we are working on these problems, which I think we'll be talking about tonight. We'll see what happens. I think we're going to read a paper that I'm working on, and we'll see what happens. But in any event, those are the things or the positions I'd be thinking about preparing and making my case against. I would start off with a writ of error to the judge and tell him the reconsideration for whatever reasoning that I just gave you a number of things to write about. And then at that point, then move it from there to the next appeal up the process. Also, you know, again, if you're in a jurisdiction that they don't have personam jurisdiction over you, then again, that's another thing you could be using. Now, some of these things, and maybe even all of these things, they just don't comprehend. They don't want to comprehend it, and they're going to give a hard time. But over the time, I think these things might start to be cleared up. I hope it will be anyway, sooner than later. And we'll see what happens as time goes on. But you do have to make the case, and those are the cases you can make. They're all constitutional. And by the way, you can move this to federal court for the cause, because it is a constitutional issue. And when you're moving into federal court for the cause, in your wherefore clause, first of all, you don't talk about the case itself. That's irrelevant. You know, there's no need to talk about that. And if you do end up in a hearing in a federal case, you're going to want to challenge object to them trying to bring the details of the case in, because what they're trying to do is to get the judge and to come along with some logical thinking. In other words, prejudice the judge. The judge is not permitted to hear anything of the details of the case. The only thing that federal judge can hear is the violation. If it's a violation of due process, there it is. It's a violation of the fact, and due process also included pretty much everything I spoke about. So there's a list of things that you can go after. At the same time, well, you do have the potential to sue these people, but I wouldn't pursue that at this point. Not, you know, I would pursue just getting your children back or your child. So anyway, that's my thinking on that. Next.
Okay, that was the last one, John. You're all done.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I think tonight I'm going to look at a paper, and I have not proofread this. I just wrote it today. I kind of been throwing some notes together for a few days here, and then I put it together today. And let me see if I can find this. I think this is it here. Bring it over here. So it's kind of premature for me to read this on the one hand, but I do intend on getting it out this week. And that being said, I'd like to kind of bring it out, and this is an opportunity for me to proofread it. You know, when you articulate something out loud, you can find your errors a lot quicker. So I'm sure we're going to find some errors in here. And anybody finds any errors that we didn't pick up on, maybe they can make a note of that and let us know. Anything they think we missed in here, they can kind of let us know. The queue is open. And for that purpose, hopefully people will have questions concerning that or ideas concerning this particular paper. So this comes on the heels of our last paper, which was a little over a week ago. I think it was a week ago, maybe it was 2 weeks ago, I don't remember. But again, I'm doing it prematurely because, again, I want to get this out in the next couple of days. I want to get it out this week. I'd like to get it out tomorrow, but that's not going to happen. Okay, so this is a grand jury presentment to President Donald J. Trump and Attorney General Pamela Bondi. Okay, and let's see. Comes now the Constituted Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. Here and after, we the people, for an unprecedented presentment with demands to President Donald J. Trump and Attorney General Pamela Bondi. The following subversion of the United States of America that has created all the woes of America was made possible by convincing the people that we are a democracy, where history has proven will only self-murder itself and create an oligarchy. Creating political parties where the appearance of 51% enslaves the 49%, unwittingly enslaving themselves also, at the end of the day. One method of assault may be to effect in the form of the constitution alterations which will impair the energy of the system and thus to undermine what cannot be directly overthrown. George Washington spoke about this. Permitting foreign influence to establish the ABA that has absolutely and completely shredded the Constitution, seized control of Congress, and destroyed our courts of law by changing them into chancery courts designed to silence and jail anyone that resists their evils. Congress has no power beyond the following 18 powers. We, the people, ordained and established Article 1, Section 8, 1, first, number one, the Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposed, and exercised to pay the debt and provide for the common defense and the general welfare of the United States. But all duties imposed and exercises shall be uniform throughout the United States. And there's another point right there in Article 1, Section 8, that has to be in uniform throughout the United States. So one state can't do one thing when the other states aren't. Number two, to borrow money. Three, regulate commerce. Four, establish a uniform rule of naturalization and uniform laws on subject of bankruptcies. Five, to coin money. Six, provide for the punishment of counterfeiting. Seven, to establish post office and post roads. Eight, and by the way, I know Trump's been talking about potentially turning the post office into a private sector, and I think that's unconstitutional. I think it makes the point. And we can't put this into a business. We just have to exercise, proper control over the Constitution, over the post office. But anyway, we'll see what happens with that. To promote the progress of science, to constitute tribunals inferior to the Supreme Court, to define and punish at the high seas, to declare war, grant letters of mock and reprisal, to raise and support armies, to provide and maintain a navy, to make rules for the government, to provide for the calling forth of the militia, to provide for organizing the militia, to exercise exclusive legislation over such district, and of course that's the District of Columbia, to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers. So that's it. That's all they can do. Just think about all that they are doing and all of the different agencies that these people have created. We the people ordained and established the following prohibitions. We the people ordained and established Article 1, Section 9. The privilege of a writ habeas corpus shall not be suspended. No bill of attainder or ex post facto law shall be passed. No captation or other direct tax shall be laid. No title of nobility shall be granted. We the people ordained and established Article 1, Section 10. No state shall make anything but gold and silver coin, a tender in payment of debts. Pass any bill of attainder, ex post facto law. Grant any title of nobility. So that seems like a redundancy. I'll have to work on that. Let me just make a mark here. Okay, we the people ordained and established Article 3, judicial power vested in one Supreme Court and inferior courts under the law and equity under the rules of common law where judges hold their office during good behavior. And none of them are in good behavior. No, not one. Congress has no power to legislate statute to be applied upon we the people. None. Congress has no power to legislate statutes upon a sovereign people. None. That seems like a redundancy here, too. I'll have to look at that later. Congress has no power to legislate or create a tax court. None. Congress has no power to replace gold and silver with fiat money. None. Congress has no power to abrogate habeas corpus. None. Congress has no power to pass ex post facto laws. None. Congress has no power to pass direct tax law. None. Congress has no power to make anything but gold and silver legal tender. None. Congress has no power to pass any bill of attainder. None. Congress has no power to grant titles of nobility, corrected by Amendment 13, ratified in 1812, adding titles of honor, also known as esquires, that was concealed in 1865. Amendment 17, a constitution provided for a balance of power that was laid waste by the unconstitutional 17th Amendment, which was specifically forbidden by the Constitution itself in Article 5 and Article 1, Article 5, Article 1, Section 3. Article 5 and Article 1, Section 3, and therefore is null and void. Article 5 reads, provided that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. So they can't be deprived of that. The 17th Amendment placed the 10th Amendment in jeopardy because states have no opportunity to argue or protect their rights. And since both houses are controlled by special interest groups that harbors unlawful agendas and empowers party bosses, all liberty is in jeopardy. Because all debates are controlled by party bosses and special interest groups and are thereby one-sided as the federal government ignores the will of the state and the people. The balance of power is the heart of our Constitution. To destroy that balance of power creates a whole new de facto Constitution and gives total power to special interest groups by reason of their bribes to both Congress and Senate via lobbying. Clearly proven by the total distrust and frustration by the people because both houses continuously ignore the will of the people, with the exception of an occasional bone they throw to the bone thrown to the people. Nothing of any true value is ever accomplished, only the constant erosion of our liberty as they trash our republic. Article 1, in its creation of two houses, was ingenious because all legislation required the approval of both houses, so that if the people controlled the House of Representatives erred, the state via the Senate could prevent that the error. And if the states via the Senate erred, the people through the House of Representatives could prevent or correct the error. Now, with both houses controlled by criminal tyrants created by the cartel, by a cartel of law, therefore, to remove the balance of power that provides for checks and balances, protects a liberty, prevents fraud upon the people, prevents unconstitutional statutes and amendments, and prevents the rise of mob or dictator rule, would be high treason. Some sound a little odd there, so I'll make a note to come take a look at that, too. The 17th Amendment ignores our founders' irrefutable argument in favor of a division of the legislative powers into two branches. We read in Anti-Federalist Paper No. 62, I can scarcely imagine that any of the advocates of the system will pretend that it was necessary to accumulate all these powers in the Senate. There is a propriety in the Senate's possessing legislative powers. This is the principle and which should be held in view in their appointment. I need not here repeat what has so often and ably been advanced on the subject of a division of the legislative powers into two branches. The argument in favor of it, I think, conclusive. The 17th Amendment abrogated the 10th Amendment because the ABA-steered Congress has seized control and there are no provisions for states to object. We, the people, did not ordain a democracy. We ordained a republic. Article 4, Section 4, the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government. Our founding fathers reviled democracy and gave their posterity a republic. As Thomas Jefferson said, the republican is the only form of government which is not eternally at open or secret war with the rights of mankind. That's why they had to change it to a democracy. Edmund Burke, of this I am certain, that in a democracy the majority of the citizens is capable of exercising the most cruel oppression upon the minority. Thomas Jefferson, a democracy is nothing more than mob rule, where 51% of the people may take away the rights of the other 49. Benjamin Franklin, democracy is two wolves and a lamb voting on what is to have for lunch. Liberty is a well-armed lamb contesting the vote. Winston Churchill, the best argument against democracy is a five-minute conversation with the average voter. Aristotle, unlimited democracy is just like oligarchy, a tyranny spread over a large number of people. And it ends up as an oligarchy. Federalist number one, Hamilton, the necessity of a government at least equally energetic with the one proposed to the attainment of this object, and the conformity of the proposed Constitution to the true principles of a republican government, and it is equivalent to our state constitutions. Federalist number 10, Madison. Democracies have ever been spectacles of turbulence and contention, have ever been found incompatible with personal security or the rights of property, and have in general been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths. Anti-federalist number 10. True Democrats are in general fanatics and enthusiasts and some few sensible, charming madmen. Anti-federalist number 18-20. A confederacy of republics must be the establishment in America, or we must cease altogether to retain the republican form of government. From the moment we became one great republic, either in form or substance, the period is very shortly removed when we shall sink first into monarchy and then into despotism. Before we establish a government whose acts will be the supreme law of the land and whose power will extend to almost every case without exception, we ought carefully to guard ourselves by a Bill of Rights against the invasion of those liberties which it is essential for us to retain, which it is of no real use for government to deprive us of, but which in the course of human events have been too often insulted with all the wantonness of an idle barbarity. Federalist number 48. In a democracy where a multitude of people exercise in person the legislative functions and are continually exposed by their incapacity for regular deliberation and concerted measures to the ambitious intrigues of their executive magistrates, tyranny may well be apprehended on some favorable emergency to start up in the same quarter. Anti-federalist number 274. There is not a tincture of democracy in the proposed Constitution, except the normal elections. Every free man of America ought to hold up, and by the way, the president isn't elected by popular vote. Every free man of America ought to hold up this idea to himself that he has no superior but God and the laws. A case to remove the subversive ABA and its barristers from the common law courts. History of British bar's agenda transforming our courts of law into courts of chancery. In 753 BC, Romulus founded the city of Rome, established upon Babylonian law, also known as law of the city or civil law, in order to maintain control over its citizens. In 534 AD, Emperor Justinian provided the Code of Justinian, containing approximately 4,200 statutes compiled from various Roman codes in the use from 117 AD to 534 AD. Civil law is result-oriented, seeking to achieve conformity, whose goal is to ensure obedience to the state expressed in its legislation. Whereas common law is process-oriented, whose goal is to ensure due process with a view towards justice. The conflict between civil law and common law come into the climax in 1215 by the signing of the Magna Carta. For an in-depth count of the rise of the common law and its battle with civil laws, civil law can be found in the book Excellence of the Common Law by Brent Allen Winters. During the middle 1600s, the Crown of England established a formal registry in London, where barristers were ordered by the Crown to be accredited. That's given official approval to the Act. The establishment of this first international bar association allowed barrister lawyers from all nations to be formally recognized and accredited by only recognized accreditation society. From this, the Ackerman Bar was established, denoting informally the British Accredited Registry, whose members become a powerful and integral force within the International Bar Association, the IBA. Although this has been denied repeatedly as to its existence, whose barrister lawyers are all registered members of a large IBA holding the British title of Esquire, a title of dignity, honor, next above the gentleman and below the knight. The creation of the bar was intended to eradicate common law in Britain and eventually in the colonies. In 1750, King George II sent bar members to the colonies to establish chancery courts in place of common law courts. When America was still a chartered group of British colonies under a patent established in what was formerly named the British Crown, Territory of New England. The first British accredited registry was established by King George III in Boston during 1761 to attempt to allow only accredited barrister lawyers access to the British courts of New England. This was the first attempt to control who could represent defendants in our courts at or within the Bar of America. Let me read that. Defendants in the court at or within the bar in America. Okay. Today, each corporate state in America has its own bar association. Example, the Florida Bar, the California Bar, that license government office attorneys. In reality, U.S. corporate courts established by the Organic Act of 1871 only allow their officer attorneys to freely enter within the bar while forbidding non-bar lawyers to practice in the courts. Only so-called licensed bar attorneys are permitted to freely enter within the bar, separating the people from the bench, because all bar attorneys at law are officers of the court itself. Just after King George III succeeded to the throne in 1760, Parliament began to impose upon the colonies a new breed of taxes and regulations. Unpopular as they were, it was the Stamp Act of 1765 that really stimulated a congealing of discontent. This act imposed a tax on just about every kind of paper produced in the colonies. The financial impact was particularly harsh, where John C. Miller wrote, "By increasing the expense of lawsuits, the Stamp Act threatened to destroy the practice of non-bar common law colonial lawyers." During this time period, British barrister lawyers were busy altering our courts into chancery courts, operating under statutes contrary to the common law. Of the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence, a common law document authored by Thomas Jefferson, 28 were non-bar common law lawyers. The Articles of Confederation, initiated in 1776, became the governing instrument of the intercolonial alliance until the U.S. Constitution took effect 8 years later. Of the 48 who signed it, 22 were non-bar common law lawyers. The U.S. Constitution was adopted in 1787 with the signature of 39 constitutional conventional delegates, including an astonishing representation of 21 non-bar common law lawyers. The Continental Congress first convened in 1774 in response to the Intolerable Acts and continued until 1789, when the U.S. Constitution, a common law document, took effect. During that period, 14 men served as president of the Continental Congress. Two served twice. Half of them were non-bar common law lawyers. Our founding fathers, led by Thomas Jefferson, penned the Declaration of Independence, the foundation of American law, which was the covenant with our Creator, a common law document, upon which we, the people, ordained and established a constitution that clearly defines the law of the land's jurisdiction as common law under Article 3, Section 2, Clause 1. Our founders, in order to prevent barrister lawyers from polluting our courts by changing our courts of law into chancery courts, wrote Article 1, Section 9, Clause 8, "No title of nobility shall be granted by the United States, and no person holding any office of profit or trust under them shall, without the consent of the Congress, accept of any present emolument, office, or title of any kind whatever from any king, prince, or foreign state." Realizing that the aforesaid clause was not explicit enough to deal with the crisis in our courts, our founders passed on December 9, 1812, Amendment 13, that the Bar State Congress concealed in 1965 with another, Amendment 13. Whereas the former states, let me think about the former, if any citizen of the United States shall accept, claim, or retain any title of nobility, and this is the important one, or of honor, or without the consent of Congress, accept and retain any present, pension, office, or moment of any kind whatsoever, or whatever, from any emperor, king, prince, or foreign power, such person shall cease to be a citizen of the United States, and shall be incapable of holding any office of trust or profit under them or either of them. Our founders did not want to be under the laws of men, but under the law of God. John Jay, the first Chief Justice, an American statesman, diplomat, abolitionist, and a founding father of the United States, said, "We should always remember that the many remarkable and unexpected means and events by which our wants have been supplied and our enemies repelled or restrained are such strong and striking proofs of the interposition of heaven, that our having been delivered from the threatened bondage of Britain ought, like the emancipation of the Jews from Egyptian servitude, be forever ascribed to its true cause. And instead of swelling our breast with arrogant ideas of our power and importance, kindle in them a flame of gratitude and piety, which may consume all remains of vice and irreligion, blessed be of God. The God who gave us life gave us liberty at the same time." Thomas Jefferson. Revelation, this is Samuel Adams. Revelation ensures us that righteousness exalted a nation. Communities are dealt with in this world. I don't know. Let me see this word. Hang on a second.
Communities.
Yeah, communities. Okay. Are dealt with this world by the wise and just ruler of the universe. He rewards or punishes them accordingly to their general character. That was Samuel Adams. Alexander Hamilton. "For my own part, I sincerely esteem it a system which, without the finger of God, never could have been suggested and agreed upon by such a diversity of interests." Charles Pinckney. "When the great work was done and published, I was struck with amazement. Nothing less than that superintendently hand of providence that so miraculously carried us through the war could have brought it about so complete upon the whole." Patrick Henry. "There is a just God who presides over the destinies of nations and who will raise up friends to fight our battles for us." James Madison. "It is impossible for a man of pious reflection not to perceive in a finger of that almighty hand which has been so frequently and singularly extended to our relief in the critical stages of the Revolution." That was James Madison. U.S. Constitution in the preamble. "We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America." Declaration of Independence. "When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal stations to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them, the methodical destruction of our common law republic by the insidious bar." Bar, and this is really going to be hard for these people to digest that are lawyers. And by the way, the queue is open. Anybody wants to get into the queue? Thoughts on what we're reading or ideas or whatever? Barristers, in the most cases, are unwittingly destroying our republic. Many truly believe that we are under Roman law. All barristers quote trial court cases believing that is common law. Many believe that it was possible to abrogate the common law. whereas servants cannot abrogate what we the people ordained and established, nor can anyone break a covenant made with God. In 1750, King George II established a bar in the colonies to destroy our common law courts and replace it with chancery courts in order to maintain control. In 1787, the Federalists, steered by the bar, was the first political party led by Alexander Hamilton. You know, he seems to be contradictive himself, some of the things he does and said, and that supported maintaining slavery. The Democratic Republican Party was a misnomer. Jefferson, like the rest of our founding fathers, knew that political parties that they are called factions would be destructive to the Union. Thomas Jefferson and James Madison in the early 1790s that championed republicanism, which is ruled by law and not men, endeavored to discourage political parties. The Federalist that eventually became the Democrat Party was formed to gather momentum to support a strong federal government, whereas the states wanted the states to be independent republics with a much more limited federal government. Those who supported stronger republic states were called Republicans. Jefferson, when elected president, made the point saying, "We are all Republicans. We are all Federalists," while at the same time endeavored to deter political parties. But the enemy of liberty, also known as the banksters and the bar, had already infiltrated the movement to create the United States, and through these parties have divided America and over time have succeeded. And I probably should put create, well, they didn't do United States Inc. back then. I'll have to think about this. I'm not sure I like the wording. Okay. Over time have succeeded in destroying a republic while claiming that we are a democracy. George Washington said that parties open the door to foreign influences and corruption, which find a facilitated access to the government itself through the channels of party passions. Thus, the policy and the will of one country are subjected to the policy and the will of another. One message of assault may be to effect in the forms of the Constitution alterations which will impair the energy of the system and thus to undermine what cannot be directly overthrown. It is indeed little else than a name where a government is too feeble to withstand the enterprise of faction, to confine each member of the society within the limits prescribed by the laws, and to maintain all in the secure and tranquil enjoyment of the rights of the person and property. In 1801, the Bar Steel Federalists morphed into the Democratic Party and thereby started moving towards democracy in the minds of the people, and over time convinced them that we are a democracy, which is the first step to an oligarchy. In 1822, through the Treaty of Verona, King George II and the Pope issued letters of marque, reprisal, to covertly undermine America's judicial, economic, and political systems. This was an act of war. In 1865, the Bar Steered Congress concealed the 13th Amendment and replaced it with another. In 1865, with the end of slavery, the Bar Steered Democrats supported Jim Crow laws and the KKK. In 1871, the Bar Steered Congress passed the Organic Act of 1871, establishing the United States, Inc. In 1878, 75 barristers established the American Bar Association. In 1913, the ABA-steered Congress passed the Federal Reserve Act. In 1913, the ABA-steered Congress passed the 16th Amendment, imposing a slave tax on the people. In 1913, the ABA-steered Congress passed the 17th Amendment, depriving the states its equal suffrage in the Senate. In 1922, the ABA attempted to abolish grand juries. In 1934, the ABA-steered Congress passed the Rules Enabling Act, empowering the ABA-steered Supreme Court to abrogate the rules of common law, replacing them with rules that are applied as law. In 1938, the ABA-steered Supreme Court abrogated common law. In 1944, Bretton Woods surrendered our sovereignty to a foreign bank. In 1947, CIA and NSA, National Police State Surveillance. In 1948, the United Nations was established as an agenda to create the New World Order. In 1950, report on the National Lawyers Guild, the ABA Communist Plot, was ignored by the ABA-steered Congress. In 1954, Dodd report on un-American activities was ignored by the ABA-steered Congress. In 2001, Homeland Security Police State Surveillance Grid reached maturity. In 2001, the ABA-steered Congress, Patriot Act, destroyed the people's privacy. I'm going to have to rewrite this one. And subjected us to unlawful seizures. In 2013, John Kerry signed the UN Arms Treaty. Today, outcome-based socialist education is being taught to our children. Need to fix that a little bit, too. Okay, the only solution to save our common law republic. The U.S. Constitution, including its foundational document, the Declaration of Independence and its capstone Bill of Rights, was a well-thought-out and debated masterpiece built around unalienable rights and truly frees man to be what he was born to be, free and independent. We do not need constitutional amendments to restore a republic. We just need to nullify all repugnant acts. Not in theory, but in fact via the Organic Act of 1871, in an act of treason and fraud, the ABA-steered Congress covertly changed our government from a compact ordained and established by we the people to a corporation established by foreign banksters and Esquire barristers. Appears to have matured by the turn of the 20th century, rendering every act of Congress null and void. Appreciating the magnitude and the complexity of this assault upon our republic, the following solution is available, and herein is the will of we the people. First, all legislation since at least the turn of the 20th century must be reviewed, and all legislation that is repugnant to the Constitution can simply be nullified by a lawful Congress, for it was created by a corporation and through fraud, and therefore is not law. And in theory can rest upon the Clearfield Doctrine as set forth in Clearfield Trust Company versus the United States. We read in the Law of the Land, the 16th American Jurisprudence, second edition, section 177, which states, "The general misconception is that any statute passed by legislators bearing the appearance of law constitutes the law of the land. The U.S. Constitution is the supreme law of the land, and any statute to be valid must be in agreement. It is impossible for both the Constitution and a law violating it to be valid. One must prevail." This is succinctly stated as follows. The general rule is that an unconstitutional statute, though having the form and the name of law, is in reality no law, but is wholly void and ineffective for any purpose, since it unconstitutionally dates from the time of its enactment and not merely from the date of the decision so branding it. An unconstitutional law in legal contemplation is an inoperative as it has never been passed. Such a statute leaves the question that it purports to settle just as it would be had the statute had been enacted. Since an unconstitutional law is void, the general principles follow that it imposes no duties, it confers no rights, it creates no office, it bestows no power or authority on anyone, affords no protection, and justifies no acts performed under it. A void act cannot be legally consistent with a valid one. An unconstitutional law cannot operate to supersede any existing valid law. Indeed, insofar as the statute runs counter to the fundamental laws of the land, it is superseded thereby. No one is bound to obey an unconstitutional law, and no courts are bound to enforce it. Okay, and that's the law. I mean, we could just, the president can actually probably, nullify it. But Congress, if we get a good Congress in eventually, hopefully, Marbury versus Madison, all laws, rules, and practices which are repugnant to the Constitution, null and void. Miranda versus Arizona, where rights secured by the Constitution are involved, there can be no rulemaking or legislation which would abrogate them. Hoke versus Henderson. That statute which would deprive a citizen of the rights of personal property without a regular trial according to the course and usage of common law would not be the law of the land. Additionally, under the principles of the Kentucky Resolution, which was a series of resolutions drawn up by Jefferson and adopted by legislature of Kentucky in 1799, protesting against the Alien and Sedition Laws, declaring their illegality, announcing the strict constructionalist theory of the federal government, and declaring nullification to be the rightful remedy. It does not need amendments to correct just the application of common law, also known as common sense, by nullification. We the people have the power of nullification. We the people are sovereign. We the people are the lawmakers. We the people ordained and established the Constitution for the United States. We the people vested Congress with limited powers. We the people vested Supreme Court with powers under the law of the land. The very meaning of sovereignty is that the decree of the sovereign makes the law. The people of this state do not yield their sovereignty to the agencies which serve them. At the Revolution, the sovereignty devolved on the people, and they are truly the sovereigns of the country. But they are sovereigns without subject, with none to govern but themselves. Foreign courts cannot condemn influences persuading sovereigns to make the decree. Sovereigns itself is, of course, not subject to the law, for it is the author and the source of the law. Of course, we're under the law of God, not of men. But in our system, where sovereign powers are delegated to the agencies of government, sovereignty itself remains with the people, by whom and for whom all government exists and acts. And the law, Constitution, is the definition, the definition and limitation of power. The people of this state, as the successors of its former sovereign, are entitled to all the rights which formerly belonged to the king by his prerogative. The state cannot diminish the rights of the people. Supreme sovereignty in the people. No authority can, on any pretense whatsoever, be exercised over the citizens of this state, but such as is or shall be derived from and granted by the people of this state. The doctrine of sovereign immunity is one of common law immunities and defenses that are available to the sovereign. And I would like to add alone. Not to them. It's not for them. We the people herein nullify Amendment 16, Amendment 17, Federal Reserve Act, the Rules Enabling Act, and the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. We the people herein demand the reinstatement of habeas corpus, the return to lawful money, also known as gold and silver, the uncovering and reinstatement of the original Amendment 13, and combine the latter Amendment 13 with Amendment 14. We the people demand the removal of all federal judges and open the doors of justice that they just refuse to do. We the people here and demand that our servants stop calling us a democracy.
John, you talked about the Rules Enabling Act and the FRCP, the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. Yeah. Why not the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure also?
Yeah. The Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. And I never looked into that. I never seen those rules. Have you?
Well, they were instituted in 1946, and I've read them, just scanned them. I haven't really gotten into them, no. But they were made by the same act.
PDF form?
I'm sorry?
Is that in a PDF form?
No, I scanned it on Law Institute, Cornell Law Institute.
Okay, criminal procedure. You know what? When they call it the FRC, Federal Rules of let me see.
Yeah, you ought to spell that one out.
They put it together as Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. You know, both might be in there because I'll have to take a look at that. It might be really one document that they
call. I really think you should spell both out.
I'll have to look into that.
Okay.
Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure. Okay. We only got one person in the queue, but if anybody wants to get into the queue, just start 6 and 1 if you're on an app or a browser. Oh, no, on a phone, I'm sorry. You start 6 and 1 if you're on a phone, and it's a should be a button there on an, if you got an app or a browser to get into the queue. So we'll take our first person here. Let's see. Robert from Texas. I think I got you going. Yeah, I think you've been unmuted. Let me try it again. Okay, you're unmuted now. Go ahead, Robert. You got the mic.
Okay, thank you very much, John. Have you got all that written down? Is that on the website now, everything that you...
Well, this is my first... I just finished it today. It's got some corrections that need to be put together. I'll work on it tomorrow. If I can get it up and going tomorrow, done, then I'll post it and I'll send out an email. As soon as I can post it, I'll send it out an email that has been posted. I wanted to talk about it tonight because I want to send it in this week, and I'd like to, and this was an opportunity not only to read it for people to hear it, but also for me to see the errors in here. And I found some errors or things that need to be explained a little clearer. But
yeah,
soon. It'll be posted right here. Let me see. It'll be on our front page. And right now we have the presentment to the United States Supreme Court. We have the addendum to the grand jury presentment. We have the indictment upon the federal judiciary. We have the presentment to President Trump. And right underneath that, we're going to put this paper here, which would be another presentment to President Trump and to Pamela Bondi, Attorney General.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure she's going to be on our side. But anyway, that was really perfect.
Well, then we need to get rid of her, don't we? Look, our job
absolutely
is not done. People need to be stepping up to things and getting more involved, because a lot of people are just, I don't know where they're at, but they're not stepping up, you know?
Well, I called into C-SPAN waiting on Warren Williams, and I was going to, I had some questions lined up for him that refuted everything he was saying there. You know, he says we need to have a good, and this is not what I plan to talk about, but, have an honest conversation. You know, well, the thing is, you know, on race, and all he does is stir up race, talking about people and parties, you know, and the bad that's been done to each one of them. Until we start talking about the first sentence of U.S. law, you know, which you read, and enforce that no human law should be suffered to contradict those in the first sentence, creation in the Bible, laws of nature, and nature's God. You know, and then when you start reading the second sentence, all men are created equal. Everybody wants to hear that. That's a uniting thing. Endowed by their creator. Everybody knows they're created by somebody with unalienable rights. You know, the life, liberty, and property, and the pursuit of happiness. Everybody, that's a uniting thing, and that needs to be our focus. And the whole deal about, you know, the Constitution is just a manual for how to, in my estimation, how to enforce the Declaration and the laws of nature, creation, laws of nature's God, the Bible. Anyway, and then the other thing is, in the promo material they had on C-SPAN or whatever they call it before the guy comes on, they must have had a dozen people accentuating that we are a democracy. And that was my question. Do you know when democracy first entered the word democracy first entered U.S. law?
It never came into U.S. law. Well, maybe some of the statutes, maybe there's something there that I'm not aware of, but nowhere in the Constitution or any of our founding documents is the word democracy found. Nowhere.
That's what I'm saying. It came in 1934, 36 U.S.C. paragraph 56, or statute, or whatever it is. So
we became a democracy by statute. What year was that?
Yeah, it was 1934. I had Louis Goldman's office.
And guess what happened in 1934? We got the Rules Enabling Act.
That was Social Security and the Works Project. It was all the, you know, the communism we could handle, I guess.
Was when they turned us into a corporation.
That was 1871, Organic Act.
But they can't make us our Constitution has to be amended to change us into a corporation.
Go back again. The Constitution has to be amended what?
You can't change us into a corporation with a statute law.
Well, you can't make it, even the people can't make an ink, because the Declaration of Independence, if very carefully go through it, you know, it is a covenant with God. We ask God for his blessings to live under his law. And clearly he accepted, and we've been blessed nation for quite some time, but we have turned into Sodom and Gomorrah. At least this is what these evil people have turned us into. But we're rising up against that. And we don't need a constitutional convention or anything, or any kind of an amendment or anything to fix the problems. The problems are all fraud. They're all built upon ink to begin with, but it's all fraud also. It's null and void. And we had read quite a few different things. American jurisprudence on its own clearly laid out, and that's law. That's the law of the land. That clearly laid out anything repugnant to it is null and void, just like Marbury versus Madison.
Yeah.
Stay away from
it. If you're gonna do a amendment, it can only give more rights, not less. They made that.
We're not going to amend anything. It's perfect the way it is. We need to fix the 16th exactly. and 17th.
Well, there's no way they can give us more rights than they already gave us. We just got away from it. They gave us all we ever needed if we would have just stuck by it.
We're not enforcing the enumerated powers, one, Section 8.
That's what this paper is really trying to really lay out, the fact that it's still there. It's still the law of the land. And all the BS around it is nothing but that. But I want to say something. You know, I've been holding myself back for a long time from talking a little bit about this. And I hope I don't come out from it from the wrong perspective or the wrong way. You know, we've got almost 12,000 people that are members. I think the last time I looked, it was 11,600 and some odd people. Okay, so close to 12,000 people. You know, we have people coming to our Monday night programs. We have far more people listening in on Rumble, just a couple of people on YouTube. We're going nowhere on YouTube. But on Rumble, we're accelerating pretty good. And some of our programs that get out there get quite a few hits. So we got a lot of people listening in, but only a few people supporting what we're doing. This, what we're doing right now, is so important. We have more papers to get out. It costs money. Everybody who is not giving something in, why don't you take some time, even if it's a one-time gift for a dollar or $5, just give us something, you know? But you should be supporting us for at least $5 a month or more. And that's just not happening. Let me tell you something. If you're all thinking that Trump is going to fix all the problems and it's going to be all, lollipops and whatever the other thing is, what is it? What's that statement? I know Glenn Beck used to say it. Rainbows and lollipops.
Rainbows.
Rainbows and lollipops. You're insane. If we don't have courts of law, we have absolutely nothing. It doesn't matter what Trump does. He can fix it all. But if we don't get our courts of law back, we have nothing. It's only a matter of time before we get right back to where we're at, because there's plenty of psychopaths and sociopaths that are drawn to power, and they'll come, and we're going to find a lot of them. You know, look what's going on in Washington right now. You know, they're really running, trying to hide under rocks, trying to figure out how they can expunge all of their stuff on their phones and emails and looking for lawyers. I mean, it's insane, okay? And all this is going to be revealed. It's starting to really pour out. Wait till the Kennedy tapes, the Kennedy stuff is poured out, and Martin Luther King. And wait until, and at that point, you know, we're going to have all of the pedophilia exposed. I mean, when all this happens, we look at all the money, and we're just in a couple of different agencies right now. Look at, the exposure is huge. So it took them a long time to construct this. To some degree, they're pretty patient, but they're happy anyway, because during the process, they're fat rats. I mean, they got plenty of money, millions and millions of dollars. They got plenty of money. They lived a good life, plenty of houses and all kinds of different things. And so they're happy campers, but with the intent of really at some point in time to enslave the world. That was their plan. And it will, if given time, it will return if we do not win our courts back. We have to put Trump under the pressure. We have to put, Pam Bondi under the pressure. We need to even go to the point of demanding her to be removed if she doesn't turn to give us courts of law back. just because she's a lawyer and incapable of understanding what we're talking about because their mind is so poisoned and they're so arrogant to think that they don't have to review what they were taught in school, you know, who cares about that? She needs to go if she's not going to fix the problem. And only if the people step up and support this movement and support these actions and to help us to do what we have to do, okay, we're not going to get it done. So there's a lot more that needs to be done. We need education in our schools. We wrote about that in our last paper, and we laid it out to Trump, hopefully there's someone up there reading it, maybe, you know, somebody, you know, what's his name, Musk or some other individual with a lot of money, maybe they'll throw us a couple of million dollars so we can go professional and really start to produce books, you know, or for our children in school from K to 12. There is no good education for our children. Whatever civics course is out there, whatever constitutional course is out there, it's all pablum. It's BS. It's nothing. It doesn't give the children what they really need. They don't have the common law. They don't come to the understanding of who we are as a people and what our heritage is and what we were founded on, the Bible. None of that is in any you don't find that anywhere. Anywhere.
Okay.
We need to create this education. We need to do something about this.
Okay.
And people need to support us in order to do that. Go ahead.
John, and you read it. It's within the course of human events, and it gets down to the laws of nature and nature's God, creation in the Bible. What Blackstone said on that, and it's his most important quote, he says, no human laws should be suffered to contradict these. So I teach that every day. I go to two prayer groups. One's got 12 preachers and another one's got like 30 or 40. And I make that known every time, you know, when we bring up what our prayers are going to be. The whole deal is in Blackstone. I just gave away another 4-volume set to a guy that scored in the very tippy top of the bar exam. So he qualifies for any law school in the United States. My other one is graduating Columbia Law in May, and he's spending the springtime in Paris with a job before he graduates. But anyway, the whole deal is the Blackstone's four sets of law, and we've got a thing going on here in Texas. I don't know if you've heard about it, but we just had a revolution on the choice of our speaker. So one of the top priorities of the Texas Republican Party was no Democratic chairs, you know, in a Republican state. And so all of our Republicans, you know, went down to do it on the 14th of January, whatever it was. And with the agreement that, you know, the Republicans will choose the next speaker. Well, as it turned out, there were some turncoats in that group of Republicans, and they didn't like who was chosen. So 36 of them mutinied and went over to the Democrats and got their votes to choose a speaker. And now the Democrats have more representation and more committee power and even a higher budget and the Republicans that are in the majority in the House. So anyway, I bring all this to, there's a Tench Cox that was a founder. He was known as the Pennsylvanian, and he wrote a little thing that I got out of the Founders Constitution from, you know, Liberty Fund. You know, we got 4,000 words in the Constitution. I got 5,000 pages to talk about each word in that Constitution. One of them was this Tench Cox, and if I had it in front of me, I'd remember it because I could read it. But let me find it real quick.
Well, you mentioned Blackstone. We have that Blackstone Volume 1 and Blackstone Volume 2. We have them available for download, PDF form, on our website. I got it on our front page, our page right now. I'm presuming, did you say there was 4 books?
Do what?
You said Blackstone had 4 volumes? Or 4 books?
Yeah, that was the original 4 volumes. And
Maybe Blackstone Volume 1 has 2 books and Blackstone Volume 2 has 2 books, so you don't know. Because that's all I got.
No. I've been trying to buy more, but the price seems to be going up on eBay. So somebody's sniffing it out. But the one I like most is the one from 1979 and University of Chicago Press. It's the most original of all of them, and after you get past the old English, you can pretty much breeze through it. I just love it. I love it. I love it. Every time I open it up, it just blows me away with something new and never heard of. And I'm pretty sure, you know, they're hiding the Constitution, they're hiding the Declaration, and I'm sure they're hiding Blackstone because, you know, that's what our founders were studying 11 years before they wrote the Declaration. It was the most, you know, Blackstone was the most quoted scholar of our founders, and then the Bible was the most quoted book. So our founders were learning, you know, all about what the laws that they were going to be writing from Blackstone prior to our Declaration. So it just pops. But anyway, let me read you this. It's real short. The United States shall guarantee every state of the Union a separate republican form of government. That's the guarantee. And thence it follows that any man or body of men, now these are the turncoats in the Republican Party picking a speaker in the Texas House, who shall make an alteration in the form of government of any state, whereby the powers thereof shall be tempted to be taken out of the hands of the people at large. And that's what they did. Our Republican form is my vote to pick the person that's going to represent me. And the person I picked to represent me decided he wanted to represent himself and go over to the Democrats. So it's a huge, huge thing. It says, and whereby the powers thereof shall be tempted to be taken out of the hands of the people at large will stand guilty of high treason. Okay, so anyway, today, you know, there's a whole chapter in Blackstone. It's volume 4, chapter 6. It's about 20 pages on high treason. And so there's some really great information there, too. And the thing is, high treason has a lower bar, that I think, than the violation of our guaranteed republican form of government. Because we were overthrown in Texas by these turncoat rhino Republicans that claim to be conservative. So anyway, I've talked enough.
All right, well, anyway, we do have those books. It does say right here, Commentaries on the Laws of England in 4 books. And this is Volume 2, and we also have Volume 1, which says the same thing. So it appears that these two volumes bring in the 4 books, all 4 books.
Right. So they're
for people that can download this right off of our website if you're interested in reading and studying this stuff. And anybody studying law, you do want to look into these things because there's going to get a lot of stuff in here that would be good for your book.
That's right. This kid just got his LSAT score. He's scoring in the top 11% of the country. But he doesn't really want to go to law school. And, well, I don't know. He's conflicted on what he wants to do. But the thing about what Blackstone says, that any student with a reasoned perspicuity can learn to be a lawyer in 1 year and not suffer his other sciences. Okay, so he could be studying, you know, in a school and studying, you know, Blackstone's laws and become a lawyer in 1 year. And so that's what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get, and I know this kid, I sent him to the Reagan Library. He won $3,000 the first time he competed, and the next time he won $9,000. So he didn't win the first one because the judges didn't know the topic. And I think that's the reason. But anyway, so, and then his brother's equally good, and he's setting the world on fire in medical school. But, anyway, it's Blackstone is the key.
Well, yeah, you don't need a year studying to know how due process works. You could do it really in a few months, but what takes the time is really learning to write. That takes a lot of time. And if you do a lot of reading of different cases and different people who write papers, you know, you can learn and escalate that time period, you know, to really learn to write good. And anybody who writes good puts a lot of footnotes in. That's key. And if you're sticking to the footnotes, you're sticking to the nuts and bolts of the law, of what you're really, you know, trying to, you know, defend or whatever the case may be.
These three kids are the cream of the crop, and they're as smart as anybody I've ever seen. And so, you know, they can do it. Blackstone's the one that said it would take 1 year. All you need is, you know, perpetuity, whatever that means. And then and you can be deemed a lawyer. It's just amazing. Every time I open it up or talk about it, I just get goosebumps all over. So I'm glad, you know, I guess I did stumble on it on your website. Your website is so amazing. You got so much great stuff. It's just hard to imagine. But I like it on paper.
Yeah, you can print it out too, though.
Okay. Yeah, right. Well, but I like it in the book. And I got Ken Paxton, you know, our attorney general that was impeached on no evidence whatsoever, and to sign up for a book club that I'm trying. I don't know how to hold a book club, but I got him to sign it, and then one of our freshman hotshots representatives, and then I've got several really good preachers that I want involved because we're going to be doing a lot of, you know, creation.
It's getting late. We've got three more people in the queue. So,
okay.
But, you know, just as a final point for what you're talking about, I kind of like the electronic forms because, you know, if you look at the page here, anybody that is viewing us, you know, we can cut and paste anything you want. And, you know, everything I got up there, a lot of the stuff is in cut and paste abilities. You know, the Constitution we have up there, you can cut and paste. We've got Black's Law, we got Beauvais' Law. We have, of course, the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights and all the other amendments. So we got it all up there.
Okay, but one last genius
to be able to go into these places, maybe do a word search to find what you're looking for rather quickly, and then be able to cut and paste it. That really is helpful. But anyway, I'll give you 30 seconds.
Okay, 30 seconds. Can I return this hard copy of the Study of Parables of the Book of Revelation?
Can you return it? I don't know if you can return it. You have to go through Amazon.
I just bought your book, and it's, man, it's impressive, and I appreciate it.
All right. Why do you want to return it?
Because you told me I need to do it online.
On what? Oh, well, that's not available in that.
I like it on paper. I've got the book. I'm not giving it up, but I just trying to be funny.
That, so. Okay. Thanks a lot, Robert.
Yeah.
Next caller. Let's see.
John, can I point out something?
Sure, go right ahead.
Right down about the quarter up from the bottom. It says, in two volumes, volume 2, books 3 and 4. So they combine two books into each volume.
Right, right. Yeah, that's what I just discovered, because he had mentioned 4, and I saw that there's 2 in each volume. Yeah. The whole thing is in 4 books altogether, volume 1 and volume 2. So, thank you. Okay, let us take our next caller. Let's see, it's Francine from New York. You got the mic. Francine, you've been unmuted. Are you there, Francine? Probably walked away for a moment. Okay, well, maybe you're going to have to get back into the queue. Francine, last call for Francine. Okay, Evelyn. Is this Evelyn from New York?
Yes, hi. Good evening. Let's see. Doing well. Busy. Let's see. I had a resource for the family court and CPS person. I know that you're addressing those types of things and know a lot more about all the statutes or whatever they would be. That's probably the wrong terminology. But there is a resource called punishedforbeingaparent.com. And the book is Punished for Protecting by Francis Banfield Amato. And this week, we just found out, this past week, that she was appointed to a Trump subcommittee. because for the last 15 years, she's been exposing the corruption in CPS and family court in New York State, and now she's gone national. So, and she's been very vocal. And in 2000, you know, in the, when Trump was in last time, she was down in Washington a lot talking to their chief of staff and other people and trying to make headway on these issues. So I don't know whether you could contact that person. I did email you and Jan, 3 or 4 different emails. So the title is in there, Punished for Protecting, and then also Punished for Being a Parent.com. There's a lot going on in the court systems, and she's been battling in the court systems, especially in New York, because it's really horrible, especially in Ulster County, New York. So that was that, and also I'm applauding you about the education pieces, and I don't know whether you want me to send you some of the writing that I did on education that has a lot of footnotes and that kind of thing. For why there needs to be accountability all the way down to the school district level in terms of whether they're training their teachers. As you may have seen in the news, only about 33% of children are reading at grade level, same thing for math. So it's a huge number of children that aren't, and that is driving the school-to-prison pipeline as well as New York State. It costs about $3 billion a year in surtaxes because of illiteracy and taking down the woke agenda and transferring it to literacy and other issues is really, really important. Plus the understanding the founding fathers and the Constitution, Bill of Rights, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's all I have to say. Any comments, John?
Yeah, I appreciate that. And maybe, you know, once if we can get some funding to do the K to 12, you know, books, because we really need to get a real good education. And if we can get the funding for that, then I'd like to start looking deeper into the things that you have. Right now, I got so many things on my plate, I don't have time to look really much about it. But you know, I'm kind of hoping that maybe someone with deep pockets realizes what we're doing and sees potential and supports us on that agenda, you know, to create a proper education for our children, a real proper education, who we are as a really who we are as a people, what our heritage really is, where our law actually comes from. Each child going through school, when they come out of school, they should be able to walk into any court understanding due process and have certain abilities to be able to write papers and do what needs to be done. That should be part of the education. You know, we have an eighth grade test from, I forget what year it was, the turn of the century, coming into the 20th, maybe a couple of years before that. And, you know, that test was definitely a college-level test. And that's where they were in eighth grade. So, you know, look at, and I've seen, you know, again, I got experience with a school where all the children, you know, they just soar in things because they got good teachers that know how to teach, how to make it exciting, and they got the right curriculum. It's a private school, of course, and they got the right curriculum. And that's what we got to give to our children. We have to teach them things, you know, who we are as a people. We have to teach them to be positive-minded and to, you know, really be people who get done the work that they need to get done, self-motivated, you know?
Yes, and there's many, many aspects to that, and there's a long, long list of all of which you've included, and there are many, many other aspects of this as well. Over the last 40 years, the scores have been going down in terms of proficiencies. And
the money paying off to try to get a better education is going up.
It's due to a college, Columbia University, and the Dr. Fontes, Dr. Pinnell, and Lucy Calkins at Teachers College, and there's a lawsuit and another law class, and now I hear there's another lawsuit coming up Parents for Massachusetts are suing the board of Teachers College, Columbia University, as well as the Columbia University Board, as well as Heinemann Publishers and Wildflower Publishers, and a couple other ones, for millions and millions of dollars. This is very significant. It probably sounds like just nothing to the listeners here, but it's very impactful, and it's really brought down the... We're 40th. You know, we're on the bottom worldwide in terms of performance, in terms of math and reading a language. So it really has a terrible, terrible impact on our society. And as you're saying, if you can't read... Well, as you're saying, it's all these types of things you're talking about in terms of citizenship are really, really important. However, you need to be able to read. You need to understand the Greek, Latin, and Anglo-Saxon parts of the language. And that is not being taught. It has been kicked out, sidelined, eliminated, and it's been replaced with DEI, woke stuff, and also just the see and say. You have to have a photographic memory using the particular curriculum that they have in the schools just for the basics in terms of reading, writing, and spelling. So it's a very, very serious problem, and my mission is to train the teachers.
Well, so, I think that's the nail you got to hit right there. Train the teachers. The teachers don't know how to teach, in my opinion, and of course the curriculum.
Well, that's because of the universities. The universities are withholding the information and crafting their certificates to meet what they want. So now we have to go back and we have to change the teacher certification tests and the whole curriculum and everything else. And it can be done. It can be done quickly.
Do you have a copy of the curriculum that teachers would go through in order to learn? I mean, is there a book that's really good on this?
I'm working on my own book and for turning it around. Yes. So, but there are, you can go on to the New York State Department of Education and find out what they're doing now.
Uh-huh.
You'll see the curriculum.
All right, well, these are things I want to look deeper into. I can't do it now because we need to go somewhere else. But if we get the funding, I'll immediately shift a lot of energy towards that and really, because we really need to do something with education. I need to
write a white paper because the General Accounting Office of the United States, my name was mentioned there, but I didn't have a white paper. I don't have a book. I'm working on it. And all this kind of stuff. So, you know, it's if anybody knows how to write a white paper, please email John and he'll email me. Thanks.
I would like to make a suggestion, Evelyn. Have you checked out the wall builders, Tim Barton and David Barton, down at American Journey Experience? They're about to start a new class here in a couple of months down there in Irving, Texas. And the wall builders, Tim and David Barton, have collected a lot of source documents. And that's good for any teacher.
So they're creating a good curriculum for teachers, for teaching our children?
It's especially for teachers.
Well, I got to look into this, yeah. Okay, appreciate that, Terry.
There's also a lot of books like the Tuttle Twins that have all different kinds of topics related to the Constitution. I can't remember the former governor. Oh, boy. He has a television program. His daughter is a representative.
Mike Huckabee.
Yeah, he has a series of books as well. And there's Brave New Books also is getting into the Constitution and Bill of Rights and the history of the Revolutionary War show and World War II, all those kinds of things. So, and I'm sure that Tim and Dave are doing a great job too. I'm not familiar with Wall Builders recently, but I've heard of them.
Wallbuilders.com or something. Just look up Wallbuilders. You'll find a lot of information.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sure. Overwhelmingly so.
Okay. Anyway, thanks, Evelyn. And anybody else wants to get into the queue, if you're on a phone, it's a *6-1. If you're on an app or a browser, it should be a button, enter into the queue. We only got one person in the queue at the moment, so we'll take that person. We'll go from there. Okay, it's a wireless caller from 219 area code. What's your first name and your state?
Hey, John. First name is James from Indiana.
What was your first name?
James.
James from Indiana. Yeah. Okay, go right ahead, James.
John, first I want to just profoundly thank you for all of your work and insight. I just came upon your site about a week and a half ago. Found my way to the Common Law, listening to some Bill Thornton videos, and then kept looking, found your site in the Common Law Access course right now for the last couple days. Just been printing up a storm, reading your documents, and just what an outstanding job. Very hiding in plain sight. The information on your site, what you put on there, your citations, because I'm a big case law reader because I like to go to the source, is just outstanding, as I'm sure everybody on the call already knows, but I just wanted to express my gratitude for all the work you've done. So, and I hope people will, more people will be involved if they go to the site and read it and understand this tool that was provided to us by the founding fathers. I mean, this is the key. This is the pathway that opens up the unshackles us, I believe. So I just wanted to put that out there first, and then I had a couple comments.
Okay, appreciate it. Go right ahead.
Okay, so just real briefly, the original question regarding gentleman had a double jeopardy issue, and I just found this today when I was reading through one of your documents. There was for double jeopardy, there's a maxim, which I never heard of this. This is even better than what the Constitution says. No one should be twice harassed for the same offense. Harassed. And I've been doing some research for a friend of mine who was, facing an issue with double jeopardy, and it says subject to in the Constitution, and the whole argument, I've done a ton of research, and they're always saying, when does jeopardy attach? And they do this mealy-mouthed stuff where they, with the hung jury, as you mentioned, the jury, basically, if the prosecution did not prove their case, then the case is over. It's a not guilty because they get one bite at the apple. The idea that, the jury deliberated 5 days and we can't hold them longer is garbage. You're 100% right. It's double jeopardy. That maxim just nails it, twice harassed. And, I just wanted to put that out there. You had it in your documentation. I think that really puts a nail in the coffin with the double jeopardy argument. I mean, adding to all the other stuff that you mentioned. That was just my first comment. The second thing was with a child support issue, I was just reading about habeas corpus. I have a sister who is being confined by one of my other sisters who's a guardian. And habeas corpus, when I read through your habeas corpus document, I'm sure everybody's read through it. If you haven't, do it ASAP. That is, it's brilliant, any confinement. And your children, or your offspring, however the term you want to use, doesn't matter because it's your property. You can deign it however you want. They're being confined by the state. And habeas corpus was the first thing that popped in my mind after reading your thing today when you were mentioning that whoever had that question, that to me I think is an absolute dynamite approach to this because they've got 3 days or up to 20 if they get additional leave to respond, which means they've got to sign under oath penalties of perjury the basis for holding the children. Who from CPS is going to do that? I think it's just a no-brainer approach, and your paper you wrote on habeas corpus is brilliant with all the citations you had in there. So that was my second kind of comment, and then I actually had a question for you.
Go into the questions. Recently found what you said.
I just read your habeas thing like 2 hours ago, and it's like it fits my situation perfectly to help my sister as an ex-friend.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, what I'm asking, though, you just found National Liberty Alliance recently, right?
Yeah, I mean, I signed up for the course like 3 years ago. I've just been ripping through the videos and printing stuff and trying to get through it, just to get through it one time, because I know I'll be going through it again and again. But yeah, I just came upon.
Well, I just wanted to offer something to you since you just recently found it. We have four papers. We have four papers on the front page. Are you able to see our desktop?
I can jump.
Yeah, you might want to look at these four papers. There's a lot of stuff in here you could probably use, and it'll also kind of clue you in on where we're going and where we're at this point in time with these four papers. And the fifth paper, and these are all pretty close back-to-back to each other over a period, just maybe 2 months, I think. But we have the fifth paper, which I just read tonight, which, again, needs some work on it, but I'm hoping to get it out this week, so it'll be the fifth paper up there. But, again, a lot of good stuff on there on this, and it'll give you some perspective of where we're at and the problems with habeas corpus. We've been fighting corpus for a long, long time, and, you know, they just don't want to hear it. They just ignore it and throw you out, and they just snuff you. That's it. They don't care. And we're working on a person right now. I just did a habeas corpus in jail for, goodness, at this point, they must be, I think, 15, no, longer than that. I've been working on it for 15 days, but I filed habeas corpus maybe 2 weeks ago. And still to this point, and 3 days is what's allotted, to this point they still haven't responded. And they snubbed their nose at the people when they came in to file it in the courts. And they really gave them a hard time, and they called people with guns to usher them out.
Well, I'll definitely take a look at it. Like I said, I'm just absorbing as quick as possible. Printing, I need to have the document, so I love printing all the stuff, highlighting it, underlining it, because I know I'm going to use it as a resource in court, out of court, writing papers. So I mark up my stuff all the time, just so.
There's another book out here that I put together that's really good. When I put this together, you know, I put together for myself and then I published it, and that book is, let me see if I can find it. Common Law Court Handbook. This is really a good book for off-the-fly information in the courts. Okay?
Oh, great. Yeah, I'll pick that up. Yeah, I'll grab that.
And it's a pocket handbook, and it covers a lot of good stuff in there that would really be helpful.
All right, that's great. Yeah, thanks for that. I will definitely grab that because this is vital information. And then I had a question. You can clarify maybe. Now, generally under common law, there's supposed to be a common law grand jury handing down an indictment. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, so, and then and this is the question. So if you had a case, or anybody had a case, and a non-common law grand jury issued an indictment at any time, and let's say it just went to trial, and let's say that the person was convicted, okay, isn't that a jurisdictional issue? Doesn't the, in other words, if it's not a common law grand jury handing down an indictment, doesn't that break the, like I call it, chain of jurisdiction? Doesn't that sever? In other words, it's void ab initio, isn't it?
Absolutely. Look, at these grand juries are civil law grand juries, and you can prove them, particularly on a federal level, and you can probably do this in every state too. If you go get there is a handbook that they give out to these people, and a questionnaire. You go through that questionnaire particularly and the handbook that they put out, and you will discover all kinds of violations of your rights. And it explains very clearly when you really think about this and what they're doing. You know, they're really doing a sort of a psychological look at the people to discover what people we want to put on what cases. You know, they ask a lot of questions that they have no business asking. And in itself is what I would use to start ripping a case apart if I was in a criminal situation. The other thing, if you're going into the court and during your time of discovery and going back and forth with paperwork, you know, the due process of the paperwork process, what I would do is I would make sure that I would get in there. I wrote a handbook for petit juries, okay, and I would get that information probably as an attachment in PDF form, not in a handbook form, but in a PDF form, as an attachment referred to from the main papers. Because remember, a lot of these lawyers are brain dead to begin with, and they don't really look at a lot of stuff. I mean, you get some good lawyers who will. But the thing is a lot of these lawyers, if they bypass it, and then it gets through, and it's part of the thing, and you don't have to argue about it because they've allowed it to go through, well, now you have the opportunity to re-school the trial jury to make them free and independent. And that's my, of course, they'll give you a hard time and, you know, all kinds of stuff, problems would erupt from that in the environment of the courts today. But we are working to make that change, and I hope it's soon. And I know I heard that Trump had dismissed, I think it was 150, I know it was quite a few, federal judges. And that is huge if that's what he had done. That is huge. That really makes me feel we're going to be getting what we've got to go to.
Right. That's great. I had one follow-up that was to a comment you made earlier in the call about, so if you're in state court, for example, and you're not, let's say like California state court, you're an inferior court in a felony case, it's supposed to be a superior court, and it's got to be a court of record. So let's say the court is not following that directive. To fight that, would it be a cross claim? Because I don't think they have a counterclaim.
No.
How would you file in federal court?
No, you file in federal court for denial of due process.
Okay, a straight case, it's a federal question because it goes to a fundamental right. Is that?
No, I would not ask for a question. I'd be filing. I'd be looking for damages too at the same time. I like to put damages of $1,000 face value of Morgan Silver dollars for every time my rights are violated by every person involved.
Sure, but does that now? And the reason I bring this up because I first, like I said, I found the common law aspect with Bill Thornton. He talks about a cross claim. In other words, you got to be a plaintiff to assert the jurisdiction you want. But how do you link that state case
You start by challenging the jurisdiction within the court that you're in, making the point that they don't have personam jurisdiction over you because it's not a court of record. That's number one. Once you make that challenge, there's a couple of things going to happen. First of all, the other side, like I say, is usually brain dead. You know, most lawyers are morons, but a lot of them are brain dead. And then they don't even make the argument or the debate on the other side of your challenge of jurisdiction. And the judge steps up and says, well, okay, I decided I have jurisdiction, so let's move on. Well, how can he decide to have jurisdiction if he didn't hear the other side? Therefore, you only have me. So that's the next thing, which is a writ of error into that court, okay, and demanding a reconsideration. Now, you're going to be denied all of this stuff. That's the packaging for now, be able to move into the federal court for cause. That's the next step, to move to federal court for cause. You shouldn't even have to pay for that. It's a moving from one court to the other. You know, maybe they'll hit you $40-$50, but they will try, and they've done it to me, $410 that they want. And they never should have done it to move it to federal court for cause or to state court for cause if you're coming from a lower court, you know, a town court or a village court. So that's your next step, and then you can move it up the line of appeals. But hopefully, you know, look at our position here is every single judge is guilty of destroying lives. So it's incalculable. And they all do the same thing. They prove conspiracy. There's a conspiracy to prove because whatever we do here in California and the cases we filed in New York or Pennsylvania, it doesn't matter where we go, whatever judge we get to, they all do the same thing, they all break the same law, and that proves conspiracy. Now, we've already proven it. And so that's the case that we're bringing in before this presentment that we did with Trump and we did with Pam Bondi, that we're demanding that these people be removed for bad behavior. And Congress isn't going to do it. Well, we the people will do it. And we're doing it right here in this paper. We're telling you right now we have the right to be able to remove these people and replace them with new gods. We have that right. We wrote it in the foundation of our law, the Declaration of Independence. And that's what we're doing. Now, what are they going to do with this? You know, the problem is, you know, Trump's not a lawyer, so that could be good. If he reads it, he better have a better appreciation for it than people who are lawyers. Because when a lawyer reads this thing, they're confronted with a major problem. They just spent $250,000 or whatever it is to get their education and go through the bar process and all that stuff. And now you're going to tell me that all that was a lie? Well, yeah, that's what we're telling you. It's hard for them to digest, and you know they just can't.
I get it. And I don't mean to monopolize the time, but I had a follow up to what I just said with the in your process you explained. And this is a real situation concerning a friend of mine, but if you're on the, let's say you're on the eve of trial, So you're going to need to get your motion in because you need the denial ruling from the trial court. But if a judge is like, well, I denied you, and now we're picking a jury, would your next step be a preliminary injunction? Because obviously you've got irreparable harm. They're trying to force you into the inferior court. California Constitution says a felony must be heard in a superior court. Superior court must be a court of record. So you got two violations right there. What's your step if time is of the essence? Would a preliminary injunction, once you get the denials from the trial court, would that be the, or was there a different tactic? Would you think that's the best way to do it, given the the emergency situation?
Well, look, once you discover that they don't have jurisdiction, you could discover that at any time. You can even be in the middle of the trial and come to the realization of that fact, and there is Supreme Court ruling on that. And so, and I'm sure we've covered it in the course. But the thing is that once you discover that, then immediately you want to file papers into the courts challenging the jurisdiction that you just discovered that they don't have jurisdiction. I don't belong here. Now, they'll try to make a point, well, you've already accepted this, that. That doesn't mean anything. It was all under a fraudulent situation because I don't belong here because this is a civil law court that operates under statutes, has nothing to do with me. You don't have personum jurisdiction. And this is the paper that you have to write challenging that jurisdiction. And the other side has got to respond, which, again, like I said, they probably won't. And the judge is going to rule for you, against you, no matter what happens anyway.
Right.
You got to file a writ of error. And demand for a reconsideration, and then you just move it to federal. Then that's how your paper is.
Move to
federal court for cause.
Okay, so that's the piece I'm missing. So what you want to do is, coming in honor, obviously, you present your argument challenging jurisdiction. Everything must cease. The judge says, you don't have jurisdiction. You file your writ of error, giving the judge a second chance to do the right thing. And then when he doesn't do that, then you go to federal court. So the way I like to do things, or, from my, past, is I always anticipate the worst. So in other words, assume you're going to get the negative ruling. So have your injunction, have your writ of error, have it all written. All you're going to do is fill in the blanks on the specifics. So you get the denial on the one day, and guess what? In the afternoon, you're in the same clerk's office filing your writ of error that day. And when you get a denial on the reconsideration, you're in federal court that day.
53.
So, okay, well, I appreciate it. I don't mean to take up a lot of time, but John, thank you so much for your the information and your website. I will definitely be back on Monday nights as regularly, and I truly appreciate all you've done. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you. We'll take on next caller. And just one other thing on that. Remember, when you go into federal court, you don't bring up the court details or anything part of the case. It's all about the violation. That's all it is.
That's a great point. That's a great point to remember. It keeps everything simple and your paperwork speaks.
Right, and they'll throw it out. If you bring one point up about the case, your case is out of there.
Oh, that's a kill shot. You shot yourself in the foot. That's excellent to remember. I'll double underline that. Thank you, John. Okay. Appreciate it.
Okay, Ross, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hey, John, you hear me?
I can hear you. Hearing you good.
I agree on that we need to restore the state legislature to appoint your senators. So the progressives' argument is we're taking the rights away from the people to vote for your senators directly.
I didn't get that. Try it again there, Ross.
I was saying the progressives would argue you're taking we the people's right to vote for your senators directly for the election.
So the progressives' position is what?
You're taking our rights away to vote for your senators directly to your Senate.
Oh, okay, with the Senate. You're talking about the fact that the Senate doesn't have power. Is that what you mean?
No, I mean the progressives' argument is that if you repeal the 17th Amendment, you're taking away the people's right to vote for your senators.
Okay, right. But the point is that's not what the senators are there for. The senators are there to represent the states, not the people. Okay, the people already have representation, and the 17th Amendment destroyed the balance of power. That's the point. So,
See, because I did ask AI for some plans to restore the restoration of state sovereignty. They gave me wonderful answers that it's hard to do because my parents are saying I don't have the capability of doing that.
Okay, and who's saying that? They don't have the capability?
No, I don't have the capability. My parents say I don't have the ability to do that myself.
Well, that might be true at the moment, but if you educate yourself properly, I think you can. I mean, you know, you push as hard as you can, you work on things, and then you come to the point when you realize that you might be able to do something like that on your own. You know, look, everything is all about really discipline. You know, you have to have discipline, self-discipline. You have to have self-motivation, and you have to buckle down and do the work to get to where you want to go. And that's what people have to do in order to really get to wherever they want to go. You know, I mean, you have to get a proper education in whatever it is you're looking at. In this case, it's law and common law and how due process works and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, we're running short on time, so we got one other caller, but you've got to get a final minute or two, Ross, if you want it.
Okay. I was just also saying, states should have power over the land in the borders instead of the federal government has 50% of Oregon's lands.
50% of what? Oregon's land?
Yes.
Okay.
And all that money goes to the federal government instead of states in the state.
That's right. Well, that's a big problem, isn't it? Because the federal government doesn't have that authority to own that land. That belongs to the people of that state.
Yes.
And it should be turned over to the people to control that of that state.
Yeah, I asked how to call a convention to become a state land state. And they asked me what benefit that would benefit the state.
Well, look, in order to solve the problem is really very simple. It's just to apply the law. There is no place in the Constitution where we gave authority to the federal government to own land. Now, we do have federal, federal groups out there, but they've been holding this for a long time, and a lot of this federal land should have been turned into states by now. But they don't want to do that because they play their con job off on the federal lands. That's the game they play. But with that, I got to move to our last caller. We only got a couple of minutes.
Okay, bye.
All right, thanks, Ross. Okay, last caller. Felicia from Florida. How you doing, Felicia?
Hello.
You got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hey, John. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
All right. This is Felicia in Florida.
Yep.
It's been a while because I had some family issues going on, and I had went on Amazon and bought National Liberty Alliance books for $15. And when I read the author, I had no idea who they were. So I logged on and found out that there was somebody that plagiarized your work.
Yep, that happened.
And then the UCC book is like 7 pages missing.
Well, the UCC book, that book there, some of that stuff I think I did right, and someone took it and added some stuff to it and then went out and sold it on Amazon. Now, I understood the CCC stuff to some degree anyway. And I've done writing on that, but I pulled it off the website since, and maybe that's what they've stolen, because I discovered there's a better way of doing this than to go through the process of the man on the land and just causing havoc. We could go in with Supreme Court rulings. We can go in with the law of the land in itself. I mean, there's so much we have, you know, and the Constitution. Everything backs up the things that we need to take into the courts and show these people that this civil law is nothing to do with we the people. You can't apply statutes to a free man and ultimately to the sovereign. And that's the problem. Of course. But some of my stuff is stolen.
You need to, I'm following you on Amazon, but you need to do something about the plagiarism of your work. I'm just saying.
Yeah, the problem is I don't have the time. That's the big problem. And I did try to find, I know the guy that took it, and I did have a conversation with him a while back, and he still goes, does what he wants to do, but he's kind of disappeared. I can't find him no more. But if I look up his name, I discovered that, an individual with that same name in the New England area is in jail for other things.
And okay.
He's an elderly guy. He's up in well past his 80s or his high 80s, early 90s. He's up there.
Okay. Also, because you know, I know his time is almost
pretty
up.
Pretty much all of his
books
are plagiarized.
Say again?
Pretty much all the books that he's got up there are plagiarized from other people. Some by me, of course. He plagiarized some of my books. Stole it.
Oh, well, you need to find a remedy for that. But
yeah,
I don't have the time.
I mean, I just don't have the time to pursue it, you know, and also trouble finding the guy anyway. And I spoke with Amazon about it, and they don't seem to care much about it. I posted another book. I got a book of memorandums, common law memorandums, that I tried to post, and they refused to post it, said it belongs to someone else. I said, well, you're going to have to tell me who it is, because I wrote all that stuff. And I could prove that I wrote all that stuff. But they wouldn't give me the information on where they're claiming that they refuse to post my book. So I have another book written already, but I can't get it posted.
So, in other words, people have to actually come to the website to actually get your book.
Well, yeah, a lot of books. I do have a lot of memorandums on the site, so you can get them on my memorandum anyway. All my handbooks are available on PDF if you want to go up and download them on PDF.
Okay. Also, from what I was told, that you just filed the non-judicial foreclosures with the Supreme Court, and I went back and I looked at it and seen that my file is still there, but there's no remedies for it. And a lot of officers told me, I know a lot of officers here. It was like, you're never going to get your house back, and that's going to happen.
They're looking at it from their perspective. We need to look at it from another perspective, okay? And the perspective we need to look at it from is that you've been injured. Common law requires for every injury there must be a remedy. So if you take that case back to court when we get common law opened up, you have to have a remedy to that, number one. Here is the big problem. At least since, let's say 1938. At least since 1938, but I know it goes far beyond that. We had these problems back in 1850. Lysander Spooner wrote about this. But in any event, all the cases, every case that they've gone, that's gone through the federal courts and even the state courts since at least 1938, okay, are unlawful, and everybody has a right for a new trial. Everybody, that's a huge thing to say. The problem that will create if that happens. First of all, I think we can probably go through, just a certain list of people that are in jail for certain things. Automatically to just be released. I mean, the IRS to begin with, anybody in there is for tax, what they call it, tax evasion. Well, whatever it is, those people need to be released. And we asked Trump to pardon those people because they need to be released. Anybody that's arrested on the federal level for having a weapon and maybe crossing a state line or whatever they do with it, as long as there's nothing illegal, which most people haven't done anything illegal, and they're in jail for that, those people need to be released. Stepping down on the state levels in the county jails, almost everybody in the county jail needs to be released. Anybody that was sent there by a town court or a village court definitely needs to be released. But even the county courts and the state courts that they send them to the county jail, there's a problem there because they're all operating under civil law. They're all running chancery courts. Major problem.
Okay. Okay, but we're going to keep P. Diddy in there. But during a housing crash in 2008, they actually paid the institutions and not the people.
And
that's a big problem.
I missed what you said. Who paid what?
back in 2008 when the housing crash started, when they was giving out all these loans and everything, they actually paid the banks the money, you know. And, of course, you know.
Well, the whole thing is a fraud to begin with. And I think something recently came up on the courts recently. Somewhere I saw something. I don't remember what I saw and where I saw it. But it had to do with the fact that the banks have no really skin in the game, because that's what we've been teaching for a long time. And that money came from the Fed, and the Fed doesn't come out to ask for it because they can't, because they'll have to expose all the fraud that goes back to 1871 with the Organic Act and all the construction of law upon that.
Right.
It's just such a big mess. But the banks have no skin in the game. They have no right, no authority to come out for after you to make payments on these loans, nor do they have the power or the authority to foreclose. And that's why they do non-judicial foreclosures, but the whole thing is a con job. And everybody turns a blind eye to it. And again, it's just more corruption in the courts. It's all sticking it to the people. And we keep taking it. It's time to stand up.
Yes, sir. I agree. But I need a remedy.
When we get the courts back, that's your remedy, because now you can move your case, you can resurrect your case, because it was fraudulently taken away from you, and I want it back. And you look at that's the big problem. All these judges and stuff, all of these people, you know, you got to be suing them. They don't have enough money to do all this. But look at collectively. All the people that will be going to jail, there's going to be so much money, so much property, gold, silver, all kinds of equity and liquidity. All this is going to be taken away from them. And Trump is clear on that. You know, when a diamond thief grabs the diamonds from the diamond store, you know, you got to give it back. You get caught. Well, I think that's going to happen. And there's lots and lots of money here for to pay also the debt off and a lot of things, more than we need. And it's not just America. The people around the world have been conned and deceived and destroyed, and they too need restitution. And I think there's plenty to go around.
Yes, sir, it is. And, you know, I know it's behind time, but there's a global shift coming. So, you know, we need to make it happen. I'm back. I had some family issues, so, you know, I had to deal with. So that's where I downfall from, but, you know.
We're going to have to close down because we're beyond our time now, and but we'll be back next week. We could talk more.
All right. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thank you. All right. Good night, everybody. Lord willing, we'll see you all next week. And again, think about giving and helping in any way you can, because we got a lot of work to do here, and this is a joint effort. Good night.